Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I mean, he's a Yorkie Chihuahua, so it's like, even if he does poop, it's like nothing.
Yeah. It's like picking up a little cat turd.
It's a little bean on the floor.
Yeah, like, and his favorite activity is to go in the cat's litter box and dig around and take their poop. Like, he likes to do that, too.
I don't know why dogs do that, but they're great litter box cleaners.
Yeah.
I had to do like
except
one of those.
For the part where he doesn't actually clean it, though. Like, he just takes it out of the litter box and puts it on the floor. Like, he doesn't take it to the trash can.
Oh, see, my dog just eats it. Just, like, chews up and swallows it.
Oh, my God. Hello, and welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is Brian, your gracious host, joined by John and Brad. John, how are you doing this evening?
That was not very genuous of you to call yourself gracious.
I am quite gracious, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think we should take a vote.
I don't know how much, I don't know what you guys heard before the music started, but Brian's been very mean.
Yes.
Very not gracious.
And thanks for joining us for the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is Brian, joined by Brad and John, and you guys have a great weekend and enjoy the Falcons game.
And now you can go to bed.
Yep. Bye. Bye, Felicia. Anyway, John, how are you doing?
Fine.
Wow. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. So, we have the Panthers without Cam Newton playing the Falcons on Sunday. That should be fun, but this all came from the Panthers officially, and by officially I mean within reason, being eliminated from the playoffs on Sunday against the Saints, where they scored 7 points, and it was because Christian McCaffrey...
It was on Monday. And two, they scored 9 points.
They scored 9 points. I was going with the offense. I'm sorry. Seven points on the offense.
You just said the Panthers.
Well, you didn't fucking let me finish. It was on Monday, though. It was on Monday. I'm sorry. Monday, the Panthers scored 7 points on offense that had nothing to do with Cam Newton when Christian McCaffrey threw a pass to Chris Martinez Manhurts. And the Panthers lost because nothing else could happen on offense. That was cool. That was fun to watch. That wasn't ugly at all. And Dante Jackson had a return for a interception score on a 2-point conversion. That was pretty cool to watch. But other than that, it was generally an ugly game. Go ahead, John. Tell us your thoughts.
The offense thing tends to happen when your quarterback doesn't have an arm.
Yes.
That was like almost physically painful watching Cam try to throw the ball to anybody other than like the little flips to McCaffrey. Like whenever he would try to drive the ball down the field, it was just like, oh, that hurts my shoulder to watch.
It was almost like they took Cam Newton, his like almost entire body, and put Jimmy Clausen's shoulder on it and expected it to work.
I mean, he was like rearing back and torquing his whole body and then throwing ducks 10 yards down the field.
It kind of looked like Peyton Manning in the last season of his career when he won a Super Bowl, minus the fact that Cam's, you know, like 8 years younger and not coming off major neck surgery. So that was concerning for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it wasn't quite as bad. Like, he could still throw it. Like, there are times where he could throw it with some zip. It was just like, it was so, there was so much effort required to get the ball in the right direction with any sort of velocity that he wasn't really placing the ball. He was just kind of heaving it in the direction it was supposed to be going.
And that's what we call a recipe for disaster. It's a bad thing. Yes. Brad, what did you think of the game?
I thought it was a good game defensively. Like I said last week on the show, that the Panthers and Saints would probably hold each other to a low total of points. You know, it was totally expected. But I thought the defense played well enough that the offense let them down. And I think that if we would have had literally any quarterback other than Cam Newton with his current shoulder issue or Nathan Peterman, we would have won the game. Like, the defense was that good on Monday.
You awake, Brian?
I thought maybe he had more to say. I'm sorry. yeah, the defense definitely showed up on Monday. I was actually surprised by that. The secondary itself played very well. I was actually very impressed by the secondary. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but Bradbury had himself a pick. Dante Jackson had himself a pick. I felt the defense played pretty well despite them, the Saints, rushing the ball pretty well. But I felt that the Saints really did that after the Panthers were on offense or on defense for like 10 years in the first half. But maybe I'm wrong. Who knows?
I mean, it was the same. The defense, in hindsight, it shouldn't have been surprising. Because for some reason, they just only know how to play football in Charlotte.
Yeah.
I think we allow like 1 yard per attempt less at home than on the road, and all but one of our interceptions has been on at home. The run defense is the same as it's always been, where it's mostly good, like 90% of the time, but we give up 2 40-yard runs per game. So it's like, oh, that was basically the average home performance for this defense this year, in retrospect.
It's very true.
You know who threw that one interception to the Panthers while the Panthers were on the road?
Matt Ryan.
Sure did.
Oh.
Now, if Matt Ryan can throw one interception to the Panthers while at home, that's like the equivalent of him throwing, what, like 7, 8 interceptions in Bank of America Stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah. The math seems valid. Yeah.
We got to be on the lookout for that, guys. Matt Ryan may be on high interception watch.
So speaking of Matt Ryan playing against his Panthers defense, the Falcons offense has still been, you know, pretty good despite the Falcons being pretty bad. Julio is still a factor. Calvin Ridley has been pretty good.
Steven Ridley.
There's a lot of Ridleys in the NFL. Calvin Ridley has been pretty good for them as a first-round pick, despite being like 45 years old as a wide receiver.
I love mixing up accidentally calling very relevant players by obscure player names.
Steven Ridley is not obscure, first of all. He's a backup for the Steelers. Yeah, anyway, the Falcons' offense has been pretty good, despite losing Devontae Freeman. They actually lost Ito Smith this week as well, so now they're back up to Tevin Coleman, essentially, as the number one guy. They've been shuffling a lot of offensive linemen in and out. This could be a very good game for the defense, as far as just seeing what they have with the younger guys, now that Shaq Thompson's on IR. I imagine the Julius Peppers won't be super involved, but the big thing I want to see is the Panthers secondary against the Falcons' skilled positions on offense, because despite whatever issues they've had, that skill position group is very good. And the Panthers' skill position group has been either very bad, mediocre, or pretty good, and it seems to vary. So, John, what do you have to say about that?
I have no idea what you were talking about. I had a phone call.
What in the fucking hell? Did you understand
Brad,
what
you
I said
first.
There, Brad?
No. I was going to
not
just
listening,
John.
I don't know if you heard my phone ring, and I was like my girlfriend knows that we podcast at this time, so maybe it's an emergency, and she was just asking me if my brother likes watches so she could get him something. give me the cliff notes of what you asked me.
So what I asked was pretty simple. The Falcons have been shuffling offensive linemen in and out. They just lost Ito Smith, and they've already lost Devontae Freeman, so Tevin Coleman is pretty much the guy running the football. But the skill positions for the Falcons are pretty good still, with Calvin Ridley,
yes,
Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu. They have like a very good group there, and I think that a good group like matchup to watch is going to be the Panthers' defensive backs against the Falcons' offensive skill positions. So my question...
Yes, because Dante Jackson got roasted by Calvin Ridley the first time we played.
Yes, and I think that Dante Jackson has come a long way since then. And he's starting to play less like a rookie and more like a guy who's been in the league for, you know, a year or two.
Yes. Sorry to do that to you.
It's fine. But it just seems like this game doesn't really matter much, but I think that this specific matchup that I just described is the one that, if you're looking at this from this game and projecting it forward into the future, is the one you want to see what happens. You want to see how the players produce. You want to see how they perform. You want to see what they do in reaction to what the Falcons throw at them. I think that that's the big thing Panthers fans should be looking at.
I mean, pretty much. We don't have anything else to look at with, you know, where we are in the season. So, like you were saying, like if Jackson looks better against Ridley than he did the first time around, like, that's a good thing. If, I feel like Bradbury will do fine against Julio just because, you know, it's Bank of America Stadium, and that's where we know how to play football.
Julio might not even play. He's been held out of practice.
Yeah, there's a chance he won't play.
They're in the same boat as us. You know, this made me realize, just like going through, like, you know, who else to pay attention to, and just like, wow, Dante Jackson is the only young player on defense, and Bradbury to an extent.
Bradbury's not good. Bradbury's got, what, one more year in his contract at this point? So,
yeah.
You want to see consistent starter-level cornerback production from him. And I think this year we saw more of it than last year, but I don't think we saw it consistently enough for me to say he's the guy you want every Sunday defending the other team's number one receiver.
Yeah, he's just kind of a rotational cornerback.
Yeah. And he's done
with
well.
With the potential, yeah.
He's done
with,
well.
With, like, the potential to have lockdown games.
Go ahead. Just nice. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
He has, like, the potential to have lockdown games, but over the course of a season, he's just kind of like a slightly above average corner, probably.
And it's weird because there's games where he plays against, like, really high-level wide receivers and does pretty well. I mean, I didn't feel like Michael Thomas did a whole lot to him on Monday. And obviously he had that one game against Mike Evans earlier in the year where he limited the guy to one catch on 10 targets. Like, it's just not consistent enough for me to say the Panthers should probably extend him after next year.
I mean, I think we'd probably still extend him. Just the amount of money we'd extend him for is up for debate.
Yeah, and that's another problem, is that nowadays in the NFL, other teams may be willing to pay more for that potential rather than what you've seen for the last 4 years on his rookie deal.
Yeah.
So, who knows? But... go ahead.
Yeah, and then hopefully maybe we see a little bit more of Rashawn Golden. Because that's about the only other player worth paying attention to on the defensive end of the ball. Everybody else is kind of like, don't hurt yourself.
Yeah, I mean, Mike
you got,
Adams
you got
is
games to play next year.
Mike Adams is like if he hasn't already started collecting that AARP, he's like there next year. And Eric Reed, I don't know if he'll be back next year. I mean, like, I feel like the Panthers could re-sign him. I'm just curious to see if they will. I don't know what his market will look like after this, you know, 65 drug tests a week season for him.
Probably won't be great.
No, I mean, I can't imagine it would be, and I would think that maybe Carolina should consider bringing him back, but I don't know. I just feel like I have this feeling that they're not going to.
You know who should hire Eric Reed?
Who, Brad? Who should hire Eric Reed?
Josh Gordon.
Hey.
Teach him how to pass. Did we,
Eric Reed was the piss in the NFL.
Because like, you know if there's even the slightest
because if there's even the hint of like anything, like he could have smoked marijuana when he was 13 years old and they would flag him for it. Like he's clean as a whistle.
He could have even like one extra poppy seed in his bagel and they'd have flagged him for it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Josh Gordon, was that ever clarified like what he did?
Marijuana.
It was marijuana again?
I think that's what I saw earlier.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like a marijuana thing or like just a, you know, not adhering to his probation things.
I think it was Rappaport that reported that they told him that either yesterday or this morning that he was being suspended indefinitely, and he posted his message about I'm taking time away to get in front of the story.
Yeah. All I'm seeing is he violated his terms of reinstatement.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I saw about marijuana could be incorrect. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably that if it's related to using anything, because he had a long list of conditions of reinstatement. So it could have been anything. Like I said in the Slack chat, he could have stayed at a nightclub past 11 o'clock. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
it's like missed a curfew or something.
It could have been anything, but all jokes aside, I genuinely hope he gets the help he needs.
Yeah. Yeah, all I see is violating the terms of his conditional reinstatement, which is kind of crazy to me that, like, his conditional reinstatement lasts that long. Like, you know, either he's good or he's not good. Like, how long does he have to be back before they're like, all right, you're just reinstated now.
You're allowed to have a life again.
Because like, it's been, what, over a year? Because he played for the Browns at the end of last year, too. So it's been over a year where it's like you're still conditionally reinstated. Like, you're basically still on probation.
I think it's a calendar year.
It's been a calendar year.
It's been a calendar year. But in the past, I always thought it was a calendar year. But he could be an exception because he's been suspended how many times? Like, he's potentially looking at a lifetime ban.
Makes sense for smoking weed, drinking
yeah,
alcohol.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's so terrible.
What an awful person.
Sounds like grounds for unemployment. Yeah, I know.
How dare he smoke weed rather than beat his significant other?
That's what I was about to say.
If he would have just beat up his girlfriend, he'd lose 4 games and be back. I mean, that's just...
Mm-hmm. And none of us would be any the wiser afterwards.
Yeah.
Washington would claim him on waivers, like, right off the bat.
Yeah.
Washington would have already picked him up. And, I mean, he wouldn't have even got suspended if there was no video evidence. Like, he could have just said, I don't know what you're talking about, and it would have been fine.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, looking forward at the...
I have something to ask. How are we less outraged now that Cam Newton's not playing? Or... are we somewhat back outraged because they still won't put him on injured reserve?
I'm more outraged.
Two things. One, I think it's Bush League that they won't put him on injured reserve. And I understand that there's an argument to be made that he could get paid by being on the active roster and he could lose money. And if that's the case and Cam wants to just be on the active roster and not play, then so be it. But I don't think that's the gist of it. Ron Rivera is one of those old school guys that thinks, oh, if I say Cam is not on IR, there's a chance he might play. They'll game plan for him and Heinicke in practice and they'll waste practice time. That's not going to happen. the Falcons and Saints are not going to devote practice time to Cam Newton when they know that he's not going to play. Cam Newton can't throw a football more than 10 yards. And if he does, it takes like full body effort to just do it. So there's no game planning against Cam Newton for the next 2 weeks. And I think it's kind of bullshit that they'll put Graham Gano on injured reserve. They'll put Shaq Thompson on injured reserve. They put Greg Olsen on injured reserve, but they won't put Cam Newton on injured reserve. And it just, when you have a franchise quarterback, there are only, I would argue, at the most 12 genuine, true number one franchise cannot win without him quarterbacks in the NFL. You have one. Why are you doing this? Why are you goofing around with his health, his long-term health? You're 6-8. You're not going to win more than 8 games, and that's a stretch because one of those is New Orleans. I don't care if they're resting their starters in Week 17. The Panthers are not going to win in New Orleans, especially not with Taysom Hill at quarterback. It's just not going to happen. But that's number one. Why are you not putting him on IR? Number two, he got hurt against Pittsburgh when T.J. Watt hit him in the shoulder, and it's been getting progressively worse ever since. Why did we wait until now? Why didn't we let him get the medical attention he needs 3 weeks ago? I believe it was against Tampa Bay when he looked like he couldn't throw then. This has not been a all of a sudden he can't throw. It's been a gradual descent into the abyss. Like, he's gotten worse and worse and worse since Pittsburgh. You know, we're on a losing streak. I get it. Ron's trying to coach for his job. He's trying to make the playoffs. I understand all that. But when you have a franchise quarterback that you're paying $100 million for and his shoulder is clearly not right, bench him. Put him on injured reserve, let him have surgery, let him get it fixed, and have him ready to go next year. Do what the Colts did with Andrew Luck. Yes, it took, 18 months for him to come back, but he looks better than ever. And when you have a guy like Cam, you have to make that commitment to invest that time to get him back to 100%. Because when he's 100%, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And yes, when he's 75%, he's better than Taylor Heineke, but it doesn't matter. You need him to be 100%. And even if we made the playoffs, even if we didn't lose 6 straight games, you know, there's no way they're going to go on the road 3 straight weeks and win out. The way this team is built this year, it's just not going to happen. So, yes, I'm very upset.
The thing that I said when it first happened was, it's crazy to me that we shut down our kicker and then eventually put him on injured reserve because he's dealing with the sore knee. And meanwhile, we're like, our quarterback's dealing with the sore shoulder, which is literally the most important part of his body. And they're like, he can tough it out.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously I don't know the specifics to know like the severity of their injuries from a medical perspective, but just like the optics of it, not great. And then, you know, Shaq Thompson goes on IR today for seemingly no reason and all this stuff, and it's like why is all this happening now, and the quarterback, who's the most important player with an ailing most important body part, is just kind of like it'll be okay. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, and what gets me is, you know, the Charlotte media reported that Ron Rivera, Marty Herney, Cam Newton, and David Tepper were in on this meeting, and they all decided that it was best for Cam for them to sit him for the last 2 weeks, and that Cam was not happy, but he understood. And yeah. What tells me is that David Tepper came into the room, and he looked at Ron and Marty, and he said, if you don't bench Cam Newton now, I'm going to fire you because you're being stupid. You know, we're paying him. He's got 3 years left on his contract that was originally $103 million. And I think it's around $60 million of it's left to be paid, and you're not going to take care of his shoulder. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that like I said, that in my anger has subsided a little bit because at least they came around to the right side of things. But there are a few things in sports that actually genuinely make me angry, and this handling of his shoulder and this, like, oh well, we're still not mathematically eliminated, so we'll see how practice goes this week. It's like, Ron, there's one possible solution or situation where we can make the playoffs. Just call it up. Just call it off. Just call it the dogs. Just let him heal up. It's a
0.9% chance. Right now, the Panthers have a 0.9% chance of making the playoffs. If they lose on Sunday to the Falcons, they're eliminated mathematically. They cannot get in at 7-9. The only way they can get in is 8-8.
Or if Minnesota wins, or if Washington wins.
They're
also out.
Yeah, and it's been that way for 3 weeks. Like, it's been the Panthers can only get in. After the Seattle loss, we were pretty much eliminated. Like, that was the game we had to win, because we would have owned the tiebreaker over them, and we would have owned the tiebreaker over several teams. But it got to the point where, like you said, it's we have to win out. Minnesota has to lose. Seattle has to lose. The Washington has to lose. The Cowboys have to win the division. The moon has to wax crescent. It has to rain on Thursday. Like, there's all kinds of weird shit that has to happen.
Like, well, Philadelphia has to win this week. Philadelphia has to lose this week because they have to beat Washington in the last week.
It's like a long list of stuff that has to happen. And it's like a couple of weeks ago, the Raiders were still technically in it, but like 34 teams had to lose in a specific way. You know, we're out. Like, yeah, math says that it's greater than zero, but we're out. You know, protect your franchise guy.
And your kicker.
Yes, God, protect your kicker, man. I mean, he's Graham Gano. You got to make sure he's okay.
I'm so curious about what his actual knee ailment was, because it was just one of those super convenient, oh man, Graham is struggling. Oh man, Graham's now on the injury report. You know,
it was sudden.
It was a sudden soreness, and then it was suddenly right after he hit a rough patch of the season. Which obviously I understand that injuries can make you play, can hinder your performance, but it's quite the coincidence when it comes out afterwards, what's the matter with Graham? His knee hurts.
Yeah, his knee hurts. That's why he missed that extra point.
Yeah, exactly.
Jordan reported that he's been dealing with it for a while, and he's considering surgery. I don't know if that's just furthering the cause of, he's not playing well, so his knee hurts, or if it's legitimate. I'm not saying that Jordan is not a good reporter. I'm just saying that the team could be feeding her bad information.
Maybe it has been bothering him for a while. It's just, like I said, it doesn't become a public issue.
He could have tweaked it when he kicked that game-winning 63-yarder. And has been hurt ever since. But it's odd, the timing of the announcement.
Yeah.
It's like Shaq Thompson. Like, he hurt his shoulder on Monday night, apparently. And now he's on injured reserve. Why?
Why risk a further injury when the season's already over?
Yeah, but you could keep him active and just not put him in the game. Because they called up Kyle Allen in his roster spot. Just put Cam on IR.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel
just
like
quarterbacks. And then if he's okay, he could play, five snaps or whatever, or you could just put him on the list of players who don't play on Sunday. Like, you don't have to put him on injured reserve.
Or both of them.
On injured reserve and call up a linebacker from the practice squad. I mean, it's not like we don't have 30 of them.
The thing that that I like about that, the whole thing too, is it's like we're holding on to Cam Newton in case we do make the playoffs?
Oh, absolutely is what he's doing. He's holding Cam 2 weeks off just in case everything goes the right way.
Yeah.
Because 0.9 is greater than zero, and there's a chance. I mean, it would be hilarious if – and I almost want this to happen, is that we actually do make the playoffs, and then we win the Super Bowl with Heineke at quarterback, like the Eagles did with Nick Foles. Yeah, like, I want that to happen so bad. But I do think Ron is giving Cam these 2 weeks off to hope and pray that we make the playoffs.
I mean, I honestly can't blame that idea, though. It's one roster spot. Like, I don't want Cam Newton to play at all for the rest of the year, but I can understand why you'd just, like, keep that roster spot open and let your quarterback rest 2 weeks in case you actually
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, though. He needs to be shut down completely if you're going to shut him down.
He does, but at the same time, how mad do you think Cam would be if they made the playoffs and he was on IR?
I don't care about his feelings. I mean, you have to protect him from himself. Like, and you have to protect Ron Rivera from himself. Like, you have to take the option off the table. It's like, I mean, I don't know of any coach who wouldn't be tempted to just to do that. I mean, it's Cam. Like, you would put him in there. But if the Panthers make the playoffs, there's a very good chance that they're going to Chicago on Wild Card weekend. And if you put Cam Newton back there, Khalil Mack will end his career.
True.
I mean, it's, you know, you're playing a dangerous game, and I don't think it's worth the risk.
They could use them like Taysom Hill. I mean, that works out for the Saints, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, if Cam was half the quarterback that Taysom Hill is.
If he was, like, a little bit shorter, white, and could kind of run instead and could, like, kind of throw when he was healthy.
And willing to play special teams.
Yeah. He'd be a great Taysom Hill replacement.
Maybe Taylor Heineke is Taysom Hill.
Oh, baby. Nope. Taylor Heineke's throwing 3 touchdowns Sunday. Calling it now.
I will say he is very athletic. Like, he ran roughly the same 40 times. He ran like the same 40 time as Cam. He's pretty athletic.
Oh, he's actually a pretty decent quarterback. Like, he's not Nathan Peterman. I mean, he's not Cam Newton, but he's not bad. Like, he threw for like 800 yards in college in one game.
So did Case Keenum.
If that's college, that doesn't count.
Yeah, I mean, I know it was for Old Dominion. I think they were playing like Division I Triple A or some shit. But
do we talk about on this show Josh Johnson's playoff stats, or I mean college stats?
No, we had no reason to. But no.
Maybe I did with, I don't know, but just because you're talking about like his stats at Old Dominion, Josh Johnson, his senior year at University of San Diego, on 300 pass attempts threw 42 touchdowns and one interception.
Jesus,
that's
Christ.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, more than 10% of his passes were touchdowns. He averaged 9.9 yards per attempt. And threw 42 touchdowns to one interception. So, yeah. Not bad.
Guy's got to have more Super Bowls than Tom Brady at this point.
Yeah. His last 3 years in college, the 3 years he started, he threw 108 touchdowns and 14 interceptions.
Fuck.
Damn.
Wow.
So, yeah. College.
Go guys. Josh Johnson. Nice. Good for him.
Oh, that got him drafted in the 5th round, and he didn't really ever do anything until now.
Yeah, I think my favorite
10 years
thing
later.
Quarterbacks. They run these air raid offenses, and they throw for 400,000 yards, and then they get in the NFL, if they even get in the NFL, and they're Taylor Heineke.
Don't you talk about Taylor Heineke that way.
Well, like I just said with Josh Johnson, threw, 42 touchdowns and one interception. And
yeah.
Then his first season in the NFL, he threw 4 touchdowns and 8 interceptions.
Yeah. He won a game last week, though, didn't he?
He did.
He sure did.
He sure did. Late bloomer, in my opinion. Late bloomer.
It's against Jacksonville, so it doesn't really count for that much, but still.
So speaking of things not counting for much, how about those score predictions for the Carolina Panthers and Atlanta Falcons game on Sunday?
We're for sure going to win.
Yeah? Go ahead, John. Tell us what you think. Give us your score prediction.
We're gonna win like 28-13.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna be like, oh, see, we should be good, and then we're all gonna get mad again because it's like, why don't we do this all season?
Brad, what is your score prediction?
You know, I think we're gonna win too. Because of two reasons. One, basically what John just said, because we're all going to be mad when it happens. And two, because it will actually harm us, because we're at the point where we need to focus on draft position more than making the playoffs, because like we've said, it's not going to happen. So we'll win. This game is going to be an absolute shit show. It's going to be probably the most entertaining game of the year, and it's going to be one of those both teams are like, no, you win. We insist. And I just think we're going to make one fewer mistake than the Falcons do. I think Taylor Heinicke is going to come in and be Tom Brady to Cam Newton's Drew Bledsoe. I think that he's going to throw for a four burger, and he's going to throw three touchdowns.
Wow.
And I think we're going to win 35-20.
Holy fuck, Brad. That's amazing. Because that was almost exactly my prediction on the Falcoholic podcast, and that's exactly what my prediction is now. I think that the Panthers will win 35-21, and Taylor Heinicke will throw three touchdown passes, including at least one to Curtis Samuel. And that was my prediction literally an hour earlier, which is amazing.
That means it's going to happen.
So here's the reasoning behind it, despite the absurdity of it. I think the fact that we're going to have Norv Turner, who isn't going to give a shit what happens on offense, and this generally skilled group of offensive players, combined with the fact that now they can throw the ball down the field, I think they may actually have some success. Because why not just like let Taylor Heinicke go out there and sling it? What's the worst that happens? This team loses? Okay.
Yeah,
we're already out of the playoffs.
Yeah, this is the Rex Grossman fuck it, I'm going deep game. Like, that's what's going to happen. He's just going to sling it all over the field.
Like, they don't have Derek Anderson anymore. Like, Taylor Heinicke was the guy who was their backup for Cam Newton to start the year. So why not let him go out there and just showcase what he's got? It just doesn't make sense not to.
He's absolutely going to do it. Yeah.
He's going to run somebody over. We'll be calling him Meineke Heinicke. He's going to throw a Hail Mary for a touchdown. And we're going to be Hail Taylor. And next thing we know, next Monday, we're all going to be talking about how maybe Taylor Heinicke is the guy who beats out Cam Newton next year, because that's how Carolina football works.
Yep.
The new Matt Moore.
The new Matt Moore. Except better.
We should definitely come out, and thanks to Walker for workshopping this idea with me. But definitely come out and just run it up the middle on first down, maybe even run it up the middle again on second down, and then just throw it deep, because there is no way they're going to expect Taylor Heinicke to unleash it after.
That's got to be established. You got to do it in case it doesn't work. Yeah, on first down, you run CMC up the middle for 2 yards.
Yep, and then you go play action, and they're like, oh, here they go again, and then you just
wide
over
open
the top.
Martinez down the field.
Yep. Hit Martinez for his second consecutive long touchdown. From a white guy who can kind of throw.
You have no idea how much I want that to happen. I want Chris Manhertz to be the guy that scores the 50-yard bomb again.
Chris Martin scores!
Martin. Did you see like Joe Tessitore text him to apologize for calling him the wrong name?
Did see that.
I thought
that was pretty cool. That's a good shout from Tessitore.
As if he actually had Chris Manhertz's number, because that's so widely available to NFL analysts. Like, come on, man.
I'm sure it's pretty easy to get a phone number if people know
absolutely
who you are.
Easy. I mean, they probably have Greg Olson's phone number or somebody like that, and they could just say, hey, what's Chris Martinez's phone number?
Would have been funny if Greg Olson gave him Ian Thomas's phone number instead. That would have been hilarious.
It just I don't know, you know, like who's watching the game and, you know, like his family or friends or whatever. And that's by far in a way the biggest play of his career. And then they're just like the announcer yelling Martinez, just not even yelling his name. Like, oh, that kind of ruins that highlight for you.
Dishonor my family.
Hopefully, somebody's got the audio of Mick Mixon calling it. Except he's probably still talking about like Cam taking this or yeah taking the snap by the time Manhurst scores, but still.
Yeah, he's still literally the lineup, like they're how they're lined up at the line of scrimmage.
He's actually gotten to the point now where he's talking about that Christian McCaffrey is now starting to come up with throw.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's finally rearing up to throw the ball. That's where he's at right now.
My favorite thing that Mick does, and I don't know why in the hell he does it, but my favorite thing he does is when we're lined up for a kick, extra point, field goal, it doesn't matter. And he says that Pilardi is looking for the perfect blade of grass on which to place the ball. And it kills me every single time. Like, why are you saying that? Nobody cares.
He's got a lot of stuff. He does a lot of those things.
Ample chest.
The ample perfect blade of grass. No. Just a giant like weed sticking out of the middle of the field.
The one that I thought about is that the way he describes plays are just very inaccurate to the actual result of the play. Like he'll compliment the defense on swarming to the ball and be very excited, and then like wrap it up with a gain of 9, second and 1. It's like,
the defense swarms the football.
Yeah.
And Alvin Kamara gets it close to the first down on first down.
It's a great job by the defense swarming to the football and getting Kamara down without letting him break a bunch of tackles. Gain of 14, first down Saints.
Luke Kuechly with the great form tackle to bring down Alvin Kamara. And that's a 17-yard gain on first down.
Yes, exactly.
Great job, defense.
It's so hard to understand. Like, you really don't know what's happening play-to-play on the radio until after the play's over and you get a time to kind of like get stuff summarized.
And this crowd is loving it as they're all booing because they're on the 5-yard line.
And then Eugene shouts something incomprehensible, too. Like Nick says it.
I think I've told you, like,
red zone scoring opportunity, Mick!
Mick Mixon was still describing the previous play, and Eugene Robinson just yelled, "Oh!" like as a reaction to the play that was actually happening live now.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is my official job application for the three of us to be the Panthers commentators on Sundays, because I feel like we do a decent job.
Could be worse. There might be some Jason Witten and Booger McFarlane.
This is true. This is very true. Jesus,
I've never
Christ
listened
so
to
bad.
Them so much because I usually have Monday Night Football on as like background noise or whatever. But listening to them actually do the play-by-play was—I understand why they're always like trending on Twitter when Monday Night Football's on instead of the actual
they're
game.
Really, really bad. Like Witten is the really bad one. Booger isn't too terrible. He's at the player haters ball. Like he hates everything. Like he's like.
He was.
I mean, he was hating on everybody. Like, you got to make that tackle. That's why you're in the NFL. You know, I'm like, damn, dude. Like, you hating on everybody. Both teams.
I love
Booger, you weren't even that good of a defensive tackle. Relax.
I love when people do that thing that Booger does a lot of where they say, like, if you want to be in this league, you have to make that tackle. As if the dude was just like, ah, I mean, I thought I'd be okay if I just let the guy go. It's like obviously he knows that. Like you're not.
It's not as if the ball carrier is also a professional athlete getting paid millions of dollars as well. Like
it always kills me when people have that take where it's just like, oh, you have to do that better. It's like, well thanks.
Yeah,
like,
no shit.
That was their intent. It just didn't work. Like let's talk about that part of things. Like why it didn't work, not that it didn't.
Oh, boy. Gotta love the color analysts of the NFL.
Jason was definitely one of those. I just don't like Cam. I can't tell you, like, one reason. It's just, there's something about him.
I can't quite put my finger on it, but I just don't like the guy.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I've never had a black quarterback throw to me. Maybe that's what it is.
He did.
Oh, he had Carter.
Yeah, Dak Prescott last year.
And Dak Prescott, well, yeah.
Mm.
That is true. I forgot that Jason Witten retired this year. I thought he retired 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he should have probably retired.
I should have retired 5 years ago.
It is pretty funny, like not to, and I know this gets like real touchy, but the two quarterbacks I hear the most of like criticism for them missing receivers, like on like every time they miss a receiver, like everybody freaks out, like wow, this guy's garbage, are Cam Newton and Dak Prescott.
Yeah,
I wonder. Meanwhile, Tom Brady has like one of the worst completion percentages and interception percentages in the NFL this year under pressure. But you know. He's Tom Brady, so he gets away with it.
Oh, my favorite thing about Monday night was when Witten and Booger were saying that Cam's completion percentage is high, and that's great, but it's because he's throwing short now. You know, and they completely ignore that when, like, Kirk Cousins has a 72% completion percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and then they talked about how bad his completion percentage was when he wasn't doing that and just left it alone. Yeah,
no shit. I mean, he's playing on a bum shoulder. Like, you haven't mentioned his injury once, like, all night.
He has, like, he was, like, fifth in the NFL in completion percentage above expectation, like, based on the types of throws he was making. And it's just, like, he's just not consistently accurate. Like, I think it was Jason Witten kept talking about, like, they need good Cam to show up more often like he did in 2015 if they're going to go anywhere. It's like, have you paid any attention? Like, as if the Cam's up and downs are the reason the team's been bad this year. Like, he's had an 100 passer rating in, like, 8 games this year.
Yeah. Yeah,
not
it's
not good enough. All about that W.
There's in an even year. When Cam Newton is on top of his game and everything's rolling on the offense, we can't stop anybody and we lose, like, 31-28. But when the defense plays lights out, we can't score. Like, it's been that way all year.
Well, yeah. the thing about Cam that will always drive me crazy is that if he's winning football games, he's not good because he's not meeting your traditional quarterback metrics. But if he's not winning games, but he is meeting your traditional quarterback metrics, he's not winning, so therefore he's bad.
Yeah.
It's never like, oh, he's playing well, but the team's losing. It's always like, oh, he's playing bad, but the team's winning, or he's playing well, but the team's losing. And either way, it's always his fault.
Yeah, that ridiculous. Was how it was with and that's like the impression the Monday Night Football crew gave during the game was just like, yeah, the reason the Panthers have been struggling is because Cam Newton's thrown like the second most interceptions in the league if you go back to the worst game of the season that he played. It's like, oh, well, that's not skewed
Meanwhile,
at all.
Meanwhile, the defense is, you know, like bottom three worst in damn near every statistical category, but, you know, it is what it is. Gotta love Panthers football. Just can't ever please those color commentators who know so much about football.
If Greg Olsen decides not to come back, that needs to be his job next year.
Yes.
Just replace Jason Witten and go in there and show us that you know what you're talking about. Because
he did a real good job the one time he did it. Was it last year?
Yeah, Greg when he was coming back for it.
He's got a knack for it, especially when he steals secrets for the Panthers. It's always nice.
Yeah.
So. anything else we'd like to add about the Falcons-Panthers game on Sunday?
Nah.
No, nah. I don't know.
Sure, it's going to be ugly, but as we said, the Panthers will win this game and Taylor Heinicke will look good. So look forward to that on Sunday and follow us on Twitter while we have a ton of fun with that, I'm sure. But this is the Keep Sounding podcast, which you can find on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We will probably talk to you next week after whatever the outcome is of this Falcons-Panthers game. This is Brian, your gracious host, joined by John and Brad. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Later.
See ya.
Keeps the football. Takes off to the end zone for the touchdown. He takes the handoff. And he scores. Avoided the Dolphins behind the line of scrimmage and took it in for the first touchdown of the night.
Newton keeps. Lowers his shoulder and takes it in for the touchdown.
On second and goal. Shuttle pass McCaffrey. Touchdown.
And off dive for Jonathan Stewart and he's in for a touchdown.
That's intercepted by Keaton. He has more of those than any linebacker in the league over the last 5 years.
Gano. a road win in New England.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.